Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show, and happy Tuesday to you. Glad to have you with me for Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for the United States of America, the best talk journalism in the country. Boy, I'll tell you, I look at this whole Donald Trump Jr. situation. Let me see if I understand this correctly. There are emails that have now been released that show that Donald Trump Jr., the son of the president of the United States, met with a young lady who's a Russian lawyer, and that he was given to believe that she had some dirt on Hillary Clinton that may have come from the Russian government. The lawyer herself now says she never had any dirt on Hillary Clinton. She never gave any dirt to Donald Trump Jr. about Hillary Clinton, but the meeting was had, and no information was exchanged about Hillary Clinton. And boy, is the Chicken Noodle News Network, the recently discredited king of fake news, CNN, and they've decided they are going to ride this hobby horse just as far as they possibly can. Heck, you've got the mayor of Whoville, Senator Tim Kaine. Remember, he ran as Hillary Clinton's running mate? Yeah, he's the guy who now says Donald Trump is guilty of treason. My goodness. You kind of wonder, take a break, folks. There was nothing that went on here. And do I think that Donald Trump Jr. should not have taken a meeting at which he thought he might get information from the Russian government? Sure. But were any laws broken? No. Was any information actually exchanged? No. Did the Russians maybe use this as a fishing expedition to see if maybe they could get something that would compromise the current president of the United States and not the lady who lost? Frankly, I think they would have rather had Hillary Clinton in there for a whole bunch of different reasons, but that's just my theory. It's only backed up by facts and logic, folks. That's all I've got. Anyway, if you want to join the conversation, it's 866-A-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our quick poll tonight is a little on the strange side, but here's the story I found. Should the role of a blind man in a new movie be played by someone who is not blind? There is a new controversy because apparently the folks who represent those who are disabled or have various disabilities have said they don't think it's right for Hollywood to cast somebody in the role of a blind man who is not himself blind, that they should go out and find a blind actor somewhere to play that role because that's the only appropriate way to do it. Does that make sense to you? Can you imagine saying that, and if you're going to play a disabled person, that you can only play it if you have the exact disability that that person had? It seems a little goofy, so I would say there's no problem with having an actor who is not visually impaired playing the role of a blind man. In the same way that we have an awful lot of people who play roles in movies. That's what they're called, roles. You are pretending to be somebody you are not. Anyway, Donald Trump Jr. has now released email threads tying him to the Russian government, sort of. Did he set the record straight or did he break the law? The House Republicans have passed a spending bill today that fulfills President Trump's campaign promise, $1.6 billion for the construction of a border wall between the United States and Mexico. Former CIA director and advisor to the president, General David Petraeus, didn't really defend the latest bash from the left on Trump, claiming he is unfit to serve as president. Okay, and who's listening to David Petraeus these days? And is the general unfit to serve as president? Well, the Pope put himself at odds with the whole world with his recent comments about the United States, and I'll give you a couple of thoughts on that. And don't forget to cast a vote in the quick poll. You'll find it at LarsLarson.com, and is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, the kind of conservative values I believe in. Just go to amac.us, not .com, or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. And a welcome tonight to our newest Lars affiliate, Talk at 980. That's KMBZ in Kansas City. Welcome on board, and I'm glad to take your calls as well. To your calls right now. Let's just go to that. Now, I'll get to some of the other details we're going to talk about a little bit later. First to Chuck in Chico, California. Chuck, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on KPAY. Hello.
Hey,
Lars. Chuck. Hi, Chuck.
Lars, I'm here. Lars.
Yes, Chuck.
Hello?
Yes, Chuck.
Can you hear me?
I can hear
you fine.
Okay,
good. I'm in my backfield.
Okay.
With a cell phone, it's the only place I can get connection.
Sorry about that.
Anyway, no, that's okay. I was in the process. Right, but I'm in a backfield. I have two German Shepherds. You can figure what I'm wiping off. Anyways, I like listening to talk radio. I've been listening to it for, gosh knows, for something like 30 years.
Good.
Yeah, and that's been a long time. Anyways, I'm listening to, and I like Rush, I like Sean, and I like Lump, but you know what really irritates the hell out of me lately?
What's that?
It's two things. One thing is, they keep talking about the unemployment is down. We still got 80 million people unemployed. That's not a good thing. It's better, but not where it should be. But the worst thing is, they always accuse, threaten Republicans, you're going to lose the House if you don't get this stuff going. Instead of threatening them to say, if you don't get this going, we're going to primary you. And we ain't got much time left to get people out there fired up for the campaign. Some people have primaries in early in the year, so we got less than 6 months more to get somebody up there. We need to start threatening these Republicans. Let me pick one. Graham. I don't care how he sounds.
Oh, Lindsey Graham, to see? We got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
He sounds all conservative, but what's going to happen the moment he gets in there?
Oh, he doesn't sound that conservative if you listen for more than 5 minutes. Kind of like John McCain. He doesn't sound that conservative either. Get rid of both of them.
Exactly. Oh, so we need to start finding good candidates that are conservative, that really we like, and put them up and put everything we have behind them and threaten these guys to say, you do what we want, or we're going to primary. Because, to be honest, Lars, I'm not going to vote Democrat. There's no way. I want something better than Obamacare, so I'm going to throw a Democrat back in that did it.
No.
And they know that.
And by the way, I heard a couple of interviews. I usually drive in about 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and I was listening to a couple of interviews on the way in, and they were talking to Democrats, and they said, well, will you help fix Obamacare, you know, if the Republicans will stop with their, you know, that you have to go our way or the highway? And their answer is, yeah, we'll fix it. Do you know what their fix is going to be? Pouring literally billions of dollars into it, because it's the only way to keep that Obamacare system working is by pouring billions of dollars into the insurance companies to keep them providing insurance that they can't afford to provide just based on the premiums. Well, America's too far in debt to do that kind of stuff.
Exactly, which would only move us closer to one-payer system, which is what they want.
If you go back 20 years to the beginning of Barack Obama's political career, he wanted single-payer, and Hillary Clinton wanted single-payer as well.
Absolutely,
and you're right that this is the way they plan to get us there. Thanks for the call, by the way. Let's go to Frank in Boston. Hey, Frank, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you, Lars. Thanks for taking my call. First, I just wanted to say that I enjoy listening to the show. Me and my German Shepherd sit on the porch all the time and listen to you as often as possible.
Everybody's got German Shepherds. I've got Scotties. Well, so what's on your mind tonight? Thank you.
Well, I honestly think, you're welcome, I honestly think that Donald Trump Jr. was set up. I think that someone either from the Hillary campaign or a Democrat, somewhere along the line, they knew that it was going to come down to this, and they set that poor guy up. If you notice, when they got there, what did he say? She had no information. She had nothing to contribute or anything.
That's right, and she also says she had nothing, and that she said she never did have any dirt on Hillary Clinton. So it does sound a bit like a setup, doesn't it? But the test should have been for Don Trump Jr. to say, if you're offering me information from the Russian government to influence the outcome of an election, the smart thing would have been to say, I'm not meeting with you. I'm not getting within 10 feet of you. But he didn't do that. Frank, thanks very much for the call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
home to honestly provocative talk, The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. Also, emails talk at LarsLarson.com. Twitter, The Lars Larson, or sorry, Lars Larson Show, and on Facebook, The Lars Larson Show. Frank Gaffney joins me now, the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, it's good to have you back on the program. Tell me about what's going on with David Petraeus and the comments that he's made about the president being unfit to serve.
Well, Lars, it's an interesting thing. David Petraeus, of course, has had a pretty remarkable career, much of it in uniform, rising to the rank of a four-star general, became one of the best known of his era for his work in Iraq and Afghanistan. He then went into a rather bad patch as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency under Barack Obama, ultimately was forced to resign in disgrace and charged with a criminal activity to which he pleaded guilty. Nonetheless, Donald Trump, I think probably in part because he felt respect for the man as a general and some sympathy for how he was handled during the Obama years, took him into his council. In fact, I think seriously considered him for the Secretary of State, and most especially listened very favorably to recommendations that David Petraeus was making for senior national security personnel. This is all by way of prelude to what happened last week at the Aspen Institute summer, I think of it as sort of a gab fest. And he was on a panel and was asked about, you know, the president and how he's doing. And David Petraeus chose to speak almost entirely about what a wonderful team of people he'd assembled. He didn't say that, but effectively that was the case. He was talking about the national security team that was hired by Donald Trump at, in many cases, at least David Petraeus's recommendation. But the moderator of the panel pressed him and said, well, all right, so he's got a good team, and we get that, but is he fit to serve? And this is the thing that I think was pretty appalling. David Petraeus could not bring himself to say yes. He didn't say no exactly, but it was pretty clear, as was pointed out by the Washington Post in a sort of after the action report, that the absence of an affirmative answer
is effectively a negative.
Unmistakably was a negative, and played into sort of a narrative that is now being pushed by the Democrats that the president simply doesn't measure up and therefore should be removed from office. I think this is regrettable, as frankly have been quite a number of the recommendations David Petraeus has made, both on personnel and on policy.
Well, you just saw that, I think it was some of this happened a couple of days ago, but the VA, Trump fires 500, puts 200 on suspension. It's time to start calling people on this, you know, and saying if you're serving the president directly as an advisor, you can't very well go out and lead people to believe that you don't think he's fit to serve. And yeah. Frankly, I don't know how you define what fit to serve is. We seem to have this litmus test up till Donald Trump that said, well, if you spend enough time in a governor's office or the Senate or the House or some other political position, that makes you fit to serve. I mean, look at Barack Obama. I mean, the guy had a record of zero accomplishments. He'd written a couple of books. He graduated from some top schools. He'd been a community organizer. He'd wasted a lot of Annenberg Foundation money. But other than that, he didn't. And I'm not sure during his tenure that he showed that he was fit to serve. And yet that question, I can't remember. There might have been a reporter who asked the question, is President Obama fit to be president after, you know, the mess ups in the Department of Justice, Fast and Furious, and all the other scandals that came with it. And yet I don't remember a single reporter saying, is President Obama fit to serve? But they've been asking this question about Donald Trump since November the 8th.
Yeah, well, and increasingly insistently, and it's not, of course, just the press that's doing it. It's the Democratic Party and its various outliers. And the thing is, Lars, as you know,
you're looking at a man who was elected by the people of the United States, who deemed him fit to lead them.
Yep.
A lot of people didn't, to be sure, and they're very unhappy about it. But I think that he has, by and large, not without some missteps, to be sure, including, among other things, some of the recommendations on policy that came from people like David Petraeus, which he accepted. But by and large, I think that he's acquitting himself pretty darn well. And the answer is, of course, he's fit to serve. And we need to give him a chance to do so with his own team of people. Aside from the handful that have been put in place so far, the Democrats, as you know, have been slow rolling virtually all of his appointments. So what we have is a president who is saddled overwhelmingly by people who were either hired by that man who I think you could legitimately say was unfit to serve, Barack Obama, or were, you know, brought in as civil servants and simply are part of the permanent bureaucracy, the vast majority of whom, again, are really pretty hostile to this president.
See,
so
and here's
it's hard for him to succeed.
Here's the thing that I think we should go back to, and then I want to spend a couple of minutes on this transformer explosion. But I think there's an easy answer for folks like Petraeus and others. You can say, well, the Constitution has three primary requirements to run for president, and once the American people have made the choice, I think it is not in keeping with the Constitution. I'm not saying unconstitutional, but not in keeping with it to say, well, the American people made the choice. He met the three criteria set up by the Constitution. Yes, he is the appropriate choice. And yes, he's fit to serve because the American people have the right to make that decision through the process we've created, even with the Electoral College and everything else. It's their right to choose a leader. And I think it's out of line for people to say, well, he's not fit to serve. Now, if he were to suffer some malady, you know, if he were shot as Reagan was, if he had to be put under anesthesia for a while, as I think Bush was for a bit, that you could say, well, somebody should take his place for that short time till we determine if he can continue. But other than that, where does anybody get off saying, well, you know, this guy is not fit to serve because you don't think he's fit to serve? Now, let me ask you about this transformer explosion in L.A. that put 140,000 people without power. You see this as a wake-up call about the fragile nature of the infrastructure that supports our life here in the United States.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot over the years, Lars. As you know, this is the dirty little secret of American power in the 21st century, and I mean that in both the literal and the figurative sense. It is dependent upon a very fragile infrastructure. And the trouble is that enemies of this country understand, most Americans are unaware of this, but enemies of this country understand very well that if they could deny us electrical power, life as we know it in this 21st century America would come to a screeching halt, literally, as well as figuratively.
I mean, water stops,
and
sewage stops. Water stops, sewage stops, refrigeration stops, medical machines stop. A lot of people die, literally could die, in the first minutes or hours after a big power outage.
Indeed, a sustained one, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. If the wake-up call of this one transformer that fortunately, they were able to do a workaround after about 12 hours, and the 140,000 people who had a very unpleasant 12 hours, you know, got their air conditioning back on and their foods presumably made it and all the rest. If that were to take place, not just on a 12-hour period or even a couple of days, but for weeks or months and over large parts of the country, it can be a nation-ending problem for us. So the wake-up call, I hope, and there's some signs of this, that President Trump and his team are seized with the dangers of a vulnerable, non-resilient electrical grid. And
very good point. Frank Gaffney from the CSP. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. Glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. And after that discussion with Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy, I want to remind you, actively planning for emergencies is extremely important. They do happen. It's not about doomsday paranoia. It's all about everyday responsibility. Getting prepped is one of the biggest keys to self-reliance. self-reliance and your ability to always provide for you and your family. I've done it for my family. You should do it for yours. The government won't be able to rescue you if things really go bad. The folks at My Patriot Supply get that, and that's why I trust them. Now is as good a day as any to take steps towards self-reliance and personal liberty and prepare. Get their new survival food supply that includes 102 adult servings of breakfast, lunches, and dinners for $99. Just call 888-411-7290. Online at preparewithlars.com. That includes tasty meals like their new savory Southwest rice dish. It's all shipped free to your door. Prepare for the unexpected and take action while things are still calm. 888-411-7290 or preparewithlars.com. That's 888-411-7290 or preparewithlars.com. Let's go to some of your calls now. Let's start off with Hunter. Hey, Hunter, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Pretty much my whole life. I'm only 21 years old.
thank you.
I'm going to see if I could touch on two bases with you today.
All right.
I'll start off with yesterday's talk about the gentleman that is being charged with harassment.
Oh, the gentleman who – let me remind people who are listening, if they didn't hear the story, this is a man who's got a criminal history. It includes rape. So that's going to color my point of view on him a bit. He was driving to work, he says. He pulled up alongside a lady who was wearing a hijab, you know, the headgear is worn by some Muslim women. And he said it scared him. So he began yelling and screaming at the woman to take it off. Now, he was in his car. She was in her car. She thought, and there was the additional factor that she thought he at some points had pulled his car very uncomfortably close to her car as they drove 20 blocks down the street. She was with another person in the car. I'm not sure if the other person was male or female, but this man was screaming and yelling at her. And I told people he's now been charged with a crime, and the crime is a crime in every American community. It's called the crime of intimidation. That is, if I'm walking down the street and I walk up to somebody who doesn't know me and I just start screaming and yelling at them, if I put them in a position where they have good reason to believe that their life or their safety is at risk, I am committing the crime of intimidation. It may be called by different names in different states and different cities, but it's a crime. And he didn't seem to understand that. And he said he was justified in screaming and yelling at this total stranger because the hijab, he says, scared him to death. So, what's your take?
So, my main concern of it is, why consider intimidation when you could look at it just as easily as racism? Because
but racism isn't a crime.
What she wears
racism is not a crime. If you are so inclined, you can hate people for their race, for their gender, for their politics, for a thousand different things, and that's not a crime. But making people fear for their lives by your actions is a criminal act.
Okay, so he'd have to act upon the fact that he was feeling.
I mean, let's take the most garden variety.
I'm just looking at it as mainly. I understood it more of he was being more racist than anything. And
no. But see, stop. I'm telling you, this is why you're going down the wrong route. Let's say, for example, take the most garden variety kind of race. Say, so you dislike black people because they're black, not for any other reason. Now, there are people like that in the United States. I think they're sad, but, you know, they're pathetic individuals for believing that they should hate somebody because of their skin color. But, okay, if you hate somebody because of their skin color, but you never make them fear for their life, you never assault them, you never do anything to try to hurt them, you've committed no crime. See, and if we tried to punish people based on their feelings, I'm sure there are people out there who hate Christians, hate Catholics, hate Jews, hate black people, hate Asians, hate Native Americans. But as long as they don't act on those things, and you can act on them a couple of ways. If you run a store and you refuse to serve people who are Jewish, you're violating the law. And I think the law is a sensible law that you say you've got to serve the customers who walk in your door if you decide to offer a service. But just being racist is not a crime. But acting on it and making people fear for their lives by your actions. And your actions, the classic one, is shouting fire in a crowded theater. These days I say shouting Allahu Akbar in a crowded theater. That can be a crime as well because even though it's just words, you've put people in a position where they fear for their lives and they could be trampled or suffocated. They could be hurt by that, and that's a criminal act. But just disliking people, that's not a criminal act. It's stupid, but it's not a criminal act.
Okay, so I didn't really mean to base it off of that he's being racist and that was his action, but I was mainly trying to state that was what started it out and could be something to be considered.
But what race? What race is a Muslim? But Muslim is not, Islam is not a race. Believing is, I mean, there are white people who believe in Islam, there are black people who believe in Islam, there are Semitic people who believe in Islam. Okay, so that's not, now what was your second issue, real quick?
Today's topic with the gentleman from the, having a brain fart.
I'll tell you what, I'll let you gather your thoughts. Thanks very much. Michael, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
I didn't know I was on. I just thought, I was thinking, sitting here listening to these guys tell us how great Obamacare is when they exempted themselves from the dang thing in the first place.
Yeah, they did. They decided that Congress should be treated like a small business, and they are not a small business. So, they're a $4 trillion business.
So I got an idea. Why don't they just make it to where they have to use the same health care bill that they create for us this time?
Because it wouldn't change a darn thing, and I'll tell you why. Most members of Congress are Well, most of them are wealthy in their own right. So if you said you have to have crappy health care, they would just go out and buy their own. Their staffs would be in a pinch because most staff members of congressmen don't make very good salaries. And then you'd be forcing Congress to work without a staff because those people would have to quit and get a real job, doing something else. But it wouldn't change anything. It might make you feel good as a voter saying, we've stuck them with the same lousy health care that they stuck us with. But it doesn't change things. What we need to do to change things is kick the Republicans in the rear end and say, get the bill passed, get it to the Senate, and then get it through the Senate. And we want you to do what you've been promising to do for the last 5 or 6 years. And if you don't do that, we'll replace you with somebody who will. Let's go to John. Hey, John, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
How's it going, Lars?
Not too bad. What's on your mind?
Well, if Trump, to our Democratic friends, if Trump is such a real good buddy with Vladimir Putin, why did he insult Putin's a vaunted Soviet Union about the little speech he made in Poland? That was pretty rude about what he just did to his best friend. And didn't we just put the missiles back into Poland?
Poland now has a deal where they're going to get the protection that they were promised by George W. Bush and then denied when Barack Obama came into office and canceled the Polish missile deal.
Yeah, sure. If I had I had a buddy like that, I sure wouldn't like him doing that to me.
You see, but the mainstream media doesn't want to point out that the facts actually contradict their crazy theories, in which they still go with this theory that somehow they look at Vladimir Putin as a thug, and he is, and they look at Donald Trump as being rude and crude at times, and he is, and they say, well, since they're to the eye of the politically correct left-leaning major media reporter, they say these guys are both cut from the same cloth, so they must be buddies. Well, I don't see it that way at all. I see it as Vladimir Putin's a thug and Donald Trump is a patriotic American who wants to put America first.
Exactly. And also, with Putin, he may be a thug, but guess what? We still got to deal with him.
You do have to deal with him, and it's better if you can deal with him. It doesn't mean you have to agree with him, but it means you are going to have to deal with him as a force on planet Earth, at least for now. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is my pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your call shortly, but I make this invitation to people who are going to run for office around the country, and we often talk to folks who are running for the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate, but we also talk to some state lawmakers as well about their runs for office, because I want you to get a chance to hear them. Now, we invite the Democrats, too, just so everything can be fair, and we very rarely get any takers on that. But Austin Peterson joins me now, who's a commentator and pundit, business owner, and that's a plus for me in somebody running for office, and he's going to run for the U.S. Senate in Missouri. But you're a libertarian. You're a former libertarian presidential candidate, but you're going to run as a Republican when you run for the Senate. Welcome to the program, and tell us why you made that decision.
Well, thanks for having me, Lars. I'll tell you, I spent 6 hours a day making over 4,000 phone calls to my supporters, and I asked them all the same question. Should I run? 100% of them said yes. which party should I run under? And 98% of them, including registered libertarians, some Republicans, and even a few progressive Democrats, said run as a Republican because they want Claire McCaskill out of office as bad as I do.
Well, and I guess the label at the end of the day isn't as important as your principles, is it?
100% correct. I am not changing who I am or what I believe in. I have always been someone who believes in liberty. I believe that the founding fathers would be rolling in their graves if they saw the type of government that we have right now. I've always considered myself a constitutionalist, fiscally conservative, socially get the government out of my dang business.
See, and I'm the same place you are, because I tell people, they'll say, you're a conservative. I say, well, I'm a conservative with a lot of libertarian principles. I want the government to leave me alone. And I'm willing to even do that when leaving me alone also means I'm passing on some benefits I could get. I always like the stories about Ronald Reagan being on his ranch and building a cistern for water, and some guy drives by one of his neighbors and says, you know, there's a government program that'll pay for that. And he says, and I don't want any part of it. And I agree with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, my family the same way. I grew up on an old tobacco plantation, and there's a subsidy that you could take that they actually pay you not to grow tobacco, and they do that so that the tobacco farmers will have less competition. So, and it's in essence a subsidy. It really harms the economy, and quite frankly, that's the kind of stuff that I'm going to government to cut. Ronald Reagan has always been a big inspiration to me. I kind of come from the Ronald Reagan, Calvin Coolidge wing of the party, and Ronald Reagan said that libertarianism is the heart and soul of conservatism. So if you want somebody who's going to get into government, to micromanage your life, you got to find somebody else, because quite frankly, I'm going to take over government so I can leave everyone alone.
I'm talking to Austin Peterson, who's going to run as a Republican for the U.S. Senate from Missouri. Now, I want to ask you about when push comes to shove, though. You're going to be running in the Republican primary. When you run up against other Republicans, this puts you in an agriculture state, a state with a lot of agriculture in it. There are going to be people who say, well, what about this program like, crop subsidies and crop insurance, things like that. I'm all for those things if they're done privately, or if they're done where where the farmer who wants to buy crop insurance is paying the whole tab for the premium, just like I pay for my insurance. And I'm wondering, how are you going to do that and win in a state with so much agriculture as Missouri?
Well, just tell them the truth, that the big corporate farms get the majority of those subsidies. So if you may like the subsidy, but if we cut the subsidy, that means that your competitors are going to get less of a subsidy as well. And they're the ones who are getting the majority of it. That's why we have so many of these small farms that are failing. We've lost the mom and pop family farm because these subsidies come in and they always go to the rich corporate farms because they have the money, they have the power, they have the lobbyists. They can afford to pay the regulations. They can afford to pay the taxes. While it may sound like it's an unpleasant scenario, it's actually going to be good for the little guy. I think that this is the right message. And, Ted Cruz did very well in the state of Missouri. He didn't win over Donald Trump. He came very close, but he ran against ethanol subsidies, and he won in Iowa. So, again, I'm not going to be I'm not going to change who I am or my principles and just to get elected. I'm going to fight for what I believe is true and right. And if we want liberty in this country, we want to cut welfare. Well, that is a form of welfare, and we need to stop it.
Well, I'm with you. So I'm going to give you the opportunity in a moment to tell people where your website is. But have you run into the New Zealand example of when subsidies went away down there and what happened after they cut them? And you'd think farmers would have been broke, and they weren't. They actually are doing a land office business right now. Have you run into that?
Now, I have not read that study, but it would not surprise me. The thing is that when you subsidize something, you think, oh, well, I'm getting a benefit, but you forget that you had to pay for it on April 15th. And that's why I am championing a flat tax, a simple flat tax. I want to turn tax season into tax 2 minutes. Because what we're doing is we're subsidizing big, rich corporations with our tax code right now. Warren Buffett was right. He may be at sort of a lefty Democrat, but he was right. He's paying less in taxes from a percentage level than his secretary is in some ways. And so I want to level the playing field. I want a simple flat tax. We need to make this a fair system. And again, it's all about a redistribution of wealth. But what we have is we have a redistribution of the wealth from the middle class to the wealthy, because big corporations don't like capitalism. They want capitalism for the poor and socialism for the rich. So it's the way our tax system is set up, it's really just bailouts for the big rich corporations. You know, we're bailing out Wall Street, we're stimulating, and we're taking money from the middle class, and we need to stop it. So if we have a simple flat tax system, that would be...
I'm with you. I want to go to a total flat tax, no deductions. I'll give up my charitable, and I'll give up my mortgage deduction. Austin, where can folks find your website or Facebook?
Well, Austin for Senate, it's really easy. You can find me, AP for Liberty, on Twitter. If you want to get really cheeky, if you go to your website and you type in fireclaire.net, you'll find me.
Austin, we'll look forward to visiting with you as we head up to when the folks in Missouri make their choice, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Lars.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you coming on. Let's go to Jackie in Virginia, listening on WCHV. Hey, Jackie, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. I started to laugh a little bit at the guy who was talking about he was so upset about seeing the woman with the hijab.
Yeah.
And he chased her down for 20 blocks or something like that. And he was, you were calling it, it was not intimidation unless you were actually physically
I think the usual standard is if you do things that a reasonable person would find would cause somebody to fear for their life. So if I walk down the street with a baseball bat and I've got it over my shoulder like I'm going off to the ball field, no big problem. If I walk up toward a crowd of people and I start swinging that bat, not at a ball, but sort of in their direction, I think a reasonable person would conclude that guy's going to hit us with that bat.
Okay, well, I'm living currently, me and my husband, we are in central Virginia. We're near Charlottesville, where you were last week, or you were coming. Wait a minute.
I was there right before Independence Day.
Right, okay. And so, anyway, you probably have heard all the stories here about the high school girl who was walking past the statue, the mounted statue, the statue of
Robert E.
Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you've probably heard all these stories.
I did hear all those stories, and I'm up against the top of the hour. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.